Welcome to Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped, and yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. This is Dreamland. Another Sunday night, Dreamland on the air. Good evening, everybody. There is breaking news. There has been a powerful earthquake. It struck Russia's Kuril Islands north of Japan today. Japan's Kyoto news agency quoted Russia's emergency ministry as confirming no casualties or damage. Officials at our National Earthquake Center say the quake registered 8.0 on the Richter scale, which would make it, quote, a major seismic event outstripping all but a handful of all of history's most damaging quakes, end quote. That's from Reuters about 1 hour ago. From Mike in Montana, one of many, many faxes of those who have been following quakes. Mike says it appears to be real this week. CNN Headline News just reported an 8.0 quake in the Kuril Islands chain north of Japan. He says this could well be the first quake in Gordon Michael Scallion's current window, which began December 1st. And that is true, I believe, regarding the window. And it is prophetic, indeed, that we would have that news. The main guest on Dreamland tonight is going to be Moira Timms. She's in Eugene, Oregon. And she has written a book called Beyond Prophecies and Predictions, Everyone's Guide to the Coming Changes. So, talk about timely. This is certainly timely. In a moment, coming up, Linda Howe. She has several very interesting reports for us. I've got a very quick note. We are on the very last hours of my book sale. And those of you that want an autographed version of my book, The Art of Talk, literally in the last hours, I think it ends end of show December 4th. That is tomorrow. So if you would like an autographed copy, and I want to stress this because we're getting down to the end of it, the book is great whether you have an autographed copy or not. Yes. And you're thinking the best gift you could ever buy anybody who's into talk radio. It's real talk. There's no contest. Now, this is an AM-FM radio that has a cassette deck on board. It stands tall. It's about 12 inches tall. It's got an LCD digital readout. It's got a timer. It's got a cassette deck that records at 1/4 speed. Now, what that means is you can take a 90-minute cassette, and on just one side of it, you can get 3 hours. Moreover, you can set a timer. So, obviously, it records Dreamland or any other show, and you don't miss it. Now, through tomorrow, Bob Crane will throw in a super high-quality 100-minute tape, which means in excess, obviously, of 3 hours, free of charge. So Christmas, Real Talk, Talk Radio, they all go together. $139.95 includes getting it right to your door, includes the shipping and handling. Call Bob Crane in the morning before they're gone at 1-800-522-8888. 1-800-522-8863. Now to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and our Linda Howe. And let's see, I'm always trying to figure out how I should introduce you. Investigative reporter.
Yes.
You are, right?
Yes, television producer.
Television producer, Emmy Award winning at that. And I would say the nation's, I wonder if I could say the nation's leading investigator into crop circles and animal mutilations.
Well, maybe one of them. The problem is that these phenomena are so wide-ranging and complex that I don't think any one of us has got a handle on anything. We're all struggling to try to understand what is happening. So I have colleagues out there that join me in my efforts, but I certainly would say that the pursuit of truth in this complex field has begun to dominate my professional life.
That would be a good understatement, dominate your professional life, yes. And certainly you'd be leading the pack. I think of you that way, Linda. You spend so much time on it.
Okay.
I know of nobody else that does the kind of work you do. I mean, there are, obviously, I don't want to leave anybody out. There are other people doing the work. But it seems to me you're at the head of the pack.
Well, thanks. I'm trying. And I really feel that Dreamland is an important connection to the world, because hearing from people about their eyewitnesses' accounts, which we can report and then encourage other people to report back, I think, Art, is forming a kind of strong network here. And I'm really grateful that I can make these reports each Sunday on Dreamland. And one of the updates that I wanted to bring to our listeners was that last Sunday I interviewed author Jim Mars about his latest investigations beyond the JFK assassination into remote viewing research by the United States government. 2 days later, Nightline, Associated Press, all over the place, there were stories, and the Associated Press story I thought was especially apropos. It began, for 20 years, the United States has secretly used psychics in attempts to hunt down Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, to find plutonium in North Korea, and to help drug enforcement agencies, unquote. This statement was confirmed by the Central Intelligence Agency, which said the remote viewing research was codenamed Stargate, which is an interesting code name to begin with.
It sure is.
And that as recently as July 1995, this summer, at least three remote viewers continued to work out of Fort Meade, Maryland, which is usually associated with the location of the National Security Agency and the Defense Intelligence Agency. According to university professors Ray Hyman, a psychologist at the University of Oregon, and Jessica Utes, a statistician at the University of California in Davis, the remote viewing study reported mixed success with an accuracy rate of about 15%. Both researchers agreed that the remote viewers were not reliable enough to be used alone, but might be helpful in combination with other intelligence gathering operations. Professor Jessica Utes said the statistical results were promising enough that research should continue. She said, quote, "I would like to see funding in the open science world. I think that we are at the point that something needs to be explained." And I think this is one of the things we've all been hoping is that the broader general academic world would begin to focus attention on areas that some of us know have some kind of a reality here. But up until these recent times, the general university population has tended to ignore what we would call some of the more psychic or phenomena of the unseen.
I know. Linda, do you think it's getting any easier out there? I'll tell you this. As a talk show host, dealing with this kind of stuff all the time, and I do on the show and my regular show, I take a lot of hits. There are a lot of less than open-minded people out there who like to come after me because I investigate this sort of thing. Now, obviously, when it begins to break into Nightline, when we begin to get prophecy fulfillment, when we begin to get films like the one of the Socorro question mark dissection, that sort of thing.
No one has proved to be false yet, and even Time and Newsweek acknowledged that.
I heard a report from somebody who called up again, taking a shot at me the other night on some other show, and said, that was what's called a blood knife. That it was a knife that produces blood, he said, and so Art Bell's full of baloney.
That's not what medical people say, Washington.
I know.
So, all of us who are trying to deal in this, we'll call it the areas that are not accepted in the general social paradigm, we all are like fish swimming upstream to a certain extent, but consider that around the world, eyewitness reports have been going on for decades, maybe even centuries. And right now, the very past 2 weeks, there are more triangles in the skies acting extremely oddly, defying what we would consider to be terrestrial physics.
You bet.
Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, he called me and he told me that since November 17th, he has received several reports from Greensboro, North Carolina, all the way to Allentown, Pennsylvania, about huge, silent, lighted triangles. One of the eyewitnesses, Kathy Schreck from Windgap, Pennsylvania, about an hour from where I am right now, told me that she pulled her car over to the side of the road around 10:15 p.m. Friday, November 17th, because she wanted to get a better look at a strange light in the sky that was only about 50 feet above her car. She could see what looked like solid gray-black metal in the shape of a huge triangle hovering completely silently without any motion at all. She estimated that there were 25 or 30 round white lights, she said, like car headlights on the bottom. She watched for 5 to 10 minutes, not wanting to take her eyes off the triangle, and then it suddenly took off and became a pinpoint of light in the distance. She was so unnerved by the experience that she called the local airport and was referred to the Seattle UFO Reporting Center. Peter Davenport there is trying to gather as many reports as possible, check them with airports and experts, and correlate sighting data. And for those listening, I'll just give the 24-hour hotline number in Seattle, because it is a good place to network in terms of reports for correlation. And that is area code 206-722-3000. The 24-hour hotline number in Seattle is area code 206-722-3000. Now, strange lights have also been reported in Puerto Rico, along with a continuing rash of strange animal deaths that have local authorities now very concerned. Less than 1 week ago, on Tuesday, November 28th, a cow was found dying on the farm of a Puerto Rico district senator near Agua Buenos, about 45 minutes southwest of San Juan. The mayor of Agua Buenos called El Vocero newspaper photographer Eddie Deesconde to go and take photographs. Eddie has been photographing these unusual animal deaths for the past 2 months throughout the island, and he talked to me today about the Agua Buenos and other cases and described the unknown creature called chupacabras, or the goat sucker, that residents in Puerto Rico have been reporting and even school children have been drawing. And here is Eddie Deese.
And the mayor called me and says, Eddie, I need to see you because I have a cow that's still alive and has two holes where this creature has bitten and sucked out half of the blood of this big, lewd cow. We're talking about a cow that is pregnant. She had a calf, and she was, you know, it was still alive when I got there around 11:30 at midnight, you know. When I got there, she was still alive, and the cow had two holes for at least an inch and an inch and a half, 2 inches of separation, and they looked like they were ice pick punch, mm-hmm. And it was completely clean.
This was on the side of the cow's neck?
That is correct.
And were any other parts of the tissue, the ears, the eyes, jaw,
They were not attacked, no way.
Nothing?
There was no other way. The only thing that we had on the cow, that she was in pain, she was actually crying out that in pain, and I opened up her eyes. Her eyes were completely almost vanished. They were completely back.
What did the senator who owned this cow, what did he say?
He didn't really actually want us to, you know, investigate more with details. But what happened is that the mayor of that town of Aguas Buenas, he actually wanted to make a big investigation. He wanted the Senate to start putting pressure that the government should start investigating more details of all these kinds of animals that have been attacked.
If I understand correctly, it has affected cats, goats, sheep, cattle, horses, chickens. Is the this case?
Everything that has been reported to the police, it's been exactly the same way. Everybody's been attacked the same way. I mean, and that they've been attacked by sort of an animal that nobody knows. That's the only thing that we have up to now.
Is that some people are reporting this strange creature with the spines running from the head down the back and with these large red eyes? And
okay. You know, looking at a bullfrog, the way the back of a bullfrog stuff like that.
Right.
This is the kind of creature we're talking about that people have seen. They describe this kind of material that this animal is sort of made out of.
Reminds them of a frog.
It could be a giant frog, a flying giant frog with sort of mixed with maybe a monkey or something. It's gonna be something that was created. It could be in a laboratory or something. It's something that. Very strange. And this, everybody describes the same kind of lumpy type, big claws, big eyes. We had two weeks ago, we had a whole hen house that lost 79 chickens and one shot deal one night. They lost the whole 79 chickens.
Did the chickens have the same holes punctured?
Yes, they did have it. They did have them in between their wings. They had them in between their wings. The thing is that we can't understand that it's very strange that this animal attacks different kinds of animals by bunch. It's just all at one time. They collapse 80 or maybe oh they collapse 79 chickens all at one time. They attack it. They suck their blood out and they kill them. And nobody knows how to, you know, because to catch one chicken, it's very hard. To kill one, and it's very hard. You know, to kill five or six at the same time, it's very hard. But, you know, 79 chickens at one time, it's very difficult. And this is why we are still investigating where all these kinds of different people, different part of the island are calling us and letting us know that last night they killed their cow, they killed their horse. They killed four rabbits the other night. Last night they had out in Carolina, somebody killed two rabbits. The other night they killed four chickens.
And they all have these puncture holes.
Yes, they did. And they were all domestic animals in their cages. They were not out in the street or nothing like that. Some of them are on the street, but they had, they were psycho fence maybe around it. It was very strange. How could somebody just jump over the fence without touching the fence, just jump over, killed all these animals, and different part of the island.
And Art Eddie D says that the number of animals killed in the last 2 months is estimated now to be several hundred, and it's reminding me and others there in the media world of the famous vampire of Moca, which terrorized Puerto Rico in the 1970s.
Linda, we are woefully short on time here, but I was going to say the same word, vampire. Two marks and blood gone sounds vampirish to me.
Well, what's interesting is just very briefly, these aren't the classic mutilations that I usually would report about, but this is happening in Puerto Rico at the same time that classic animal mutilations are being reported right around us in southern Oklahoma, Missouri, southern Colorado, Susanville, California, Northern Ireland, Saskatchewan, Canada. There seems to be a rash of them right now.
Right. All right. We've got a scoot, so give us your info quick.
Okay, thanks. I would like to give my fax number is area code 215-491-9842. My address is Linda Howe at Post Office Box 538 in Huntingdon Valley, Pennsylvania, zip code 19006. And the toll-free number for information about my books and documentaries is 800-707-9993. Again, that's 800-707-9993. 9993, and on that toll-free number, people can leave phone numbers for me to call back also if they do have something to report.
Linda, I've got a scoot. Thanks a million.
And thank you, Art.
Take care. That, of course, is Linda Howe. And in a moment, Moira Timms. Copies of Moira Timms' book. What does the future hold for us as we approach the new century? Are we on the brink of enlightenment or the eve of destruction? Prophets from Nostradamus to Edgar Cayce have made dramatic predictions about the period leading up to the year 2012. Predictions ranging from a cataclysmic shifting of the Earth's poles to the dawning of a new order of the ages. Many have seen the current decade as a time for purification, a healing crisis that will either lead to an entirely new phase of evolution or our annihilation. The outcome, uncertain. This timely and important book synthesizes the major world prophecies, including those of the Hopi, the Mayans, Babylonians, the Bible, Nostradamus, Edgar Cayce, and the Great Pyramid, into a compelling, unified theory with an inescapable message. The choices we collectively make today create our tomorrow. Positive changes in the mass consciousness and constructive actions can modify our planetary karma and avert catastrophe. Corroborated throughout scientific, seismological, and environmental documentation, beyond prophecies and predictions, issues an urgent call to action that we cannot afford to ignore. So, a very important and timely interview coming up. Moira Timms, M.S., is the author of the best-selling Beyond Prophecies and Predictions, Random House book, by the way, Prophecies and Predictions, and The 6 o'clock Bus. Find out about that. She is a researcher and an archaic futurist, that's interesting, specializing in the beginnings and endings of historical cycles. Her work blends Egyptian mysteries, prophecy, mythology, and science. As we approach the turn of the century, Moira's ability to synthesize diverse aspects into the big picture is a gift to empower your highest purpose. And here from Eugene, Oregon, she is. Hi, Moira.
Hello, Art.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I was sorry to hear that news about the earthquake. That's really very startling.
Well, the 8.0 was startling. If the report of the 8.2 should be true, that's really startling.
Was this both, were both of these events on CNN?
Well, the facts, yes. To answer your first question, the first event I personally saw on CNN, the 8.0 earthquake. The second facts arrived literally 5 minutes ago, and I have no way of confirming it.
Yes, because sometimes there's different earthquake centers all over the world that do monitor these things on the Richter scale, and so many times the same event will get reported from various sources, but with a slightly different Richter number.
It is true, and we can hope that might be true in this case, Moira, because what would it generally mean? I know you're not a seismologist, but to have an 8.0 earthquake, which is very unusual to begin with, followed within hours, literally, by an 8.2, if that were true, what would that say?
It would say things are getting very intense around the Ring of Fire. The information that I received from the National Earthquake Information Service in Golden, Colorado, is that what is normal in any given year, Art, is that on an average there's one great quake, and that means 8.0 plus, you know?
Right.
There would be 18 major quakes, which would be between 7 and 7.9. And so you see there's a very fine line between having a bunch of major ones at 7.9 and a great one at 8. It's only 1 point difference. Anyway, you can have 120 strong ones, 6.5 plus, and then about a total on the average of earthquakes altogether. And so the Ring of Fire is the most seismically active area in the whole world, and certainly around Japan, when you look at the deep ocean trenches on some of the Navy maps, I'm looking at one right now.
Yes.
You see that there's just a labyrinth underneath the ocean depths of trenches and core spreading, tectonic plate ruptures, all of this kind of thing, and it's like a freeway map. So I'm looking at this particular trench here. It's the Kirill Trench. It's a very straight area that goes across the northwest from just above Japan, where Hokkaido is, the northern part of the island chain.
Yes,
there,
of course. Uh-huh.
To the Kamchatka Peninsula, and then it goes across to Alaska. So this is just slightly northwest of the major area where Edgar Cayce said would be the most turmoil, and to watch that area for changes.
But well,
it's all part of the scheme of things, and we can't say we're surprised, really, although, you know, the idea of loss of life is always upsetting.
Well, it is. Fortunately, of course, this is an area where there is not a lot of life to begin with. The problem is that it may be, as one of my factors suggested, the beginning of Gordon Michael Scallion's predicted four-quake scenario in the eight-point range. Now, I understand before the announcement of the quake today and earlier today, you spoke with Gordon Michael Scallion?
I spoke to him 2 days ago.
2 days ago?
Yes. He didn't mention anything about earthquakes.
Oh, he did not?
No.
Is there anything he did mention that would be relevant that you'd like to pass along?
Well, I was going to mention it later in the show when it kind of came up organically.
Okay.
Because he's talking about something quite different as far as the major focus for next year, so... I'll just leave that for later on.
All right.
It's not quite related to this.
All right. Anyway, your work has been pretty wide-ranging, hasn't it? In other words, you've looked at almost all prophecy you've been able to look at. And have you found a commonality between the prophets, between what science you've looked at, the Hopi, the Mayan prophecy, the Babylonian, all of them? Is there any commonality?
Oh, yes, yes. Really, the thing that is most amazing, and I guess it's not really news right now, but it was news when it was discovered, was that it didn't matter what prophecy had been issued when and where and to whom. Basically, the major prophecies were saying the same things. They were just different historical times, different cultural contexts, you know. And so the prophecies that I examined are not necessarily the predictions that somebody's aunt in Boise, Idaho would make, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But more like the authentic traditional prophecies from important world cultures that have had these, you know, guidelines since the year dot. And so when I hear an individual making a prediction, I don't pay as much attention as something that is consistent with what the ancient people said. So in talking of the similarities, I think it would be concise to say that all of them said there would come a time and there'd be an event that would kick off a whole prophecy cycle. And after that, there would be a number of things that would happen, the kind of things we're seeing happen in the world right now. And then there would be a culmination of this cycle, and after that, there would be a big event, and they didn't spell out exactly what that was, but they were, you know, allusions to what it might be in the New World Age, the end of the world, you know, this kind of thing?
Yes.
So when you look at the historical record, for instance, I could share with you that the Hopi, they had said there would come a time in the future when a gourd of ashes would be dropped from the sky, and it would burn everything, and it would kill the fish in the ocean, and nothing would live or grow in the area where it fell. So when they saw the atomic bomb being dropped at the beginning of, you know, the end of the war, they thought, uh-oh, and this seemed very significant to them. Well, in the Bible, 2,000 years ago, Jesus was on the Mount of Olives with his disciples, and they were saying, gosh, you know, and he was telling them about the things that were to come, but it never sounded like cheerful stuff, you see. So they said, well, what would be some of the signs of your return, and all these things coming to pass? And so what Jesus is recorded saying in the Gospels is, when the powers of heaven are shaken, etc., etc., that will be the sign of these things about to occur. So if you look, I mean, the deeper you can look into these things and examine what seems to be obvious, the deeper you can penetrate the real mystery of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the translation from the Greek, the powers of heaven. Heaven is Uranus in Greek. But that's the same root word as uranium, as Uranus, the planet. You could equally well translate it as when the powers of uranium are shaken, you see.
Which would point toward some sort of nuclear.
So that could be the atomic bomb, you know, that kind of thing. And in fact, even when the atomic bomb was dropped, the code name was Baby Jesus, or Little Boy. There's variations as to what it was actually called.
It was Little Boy and Fat Man.
And so anyway, the other thing that I'm thinking of that is similar is in the Great Pyramid. Now, there's a little bit of misunderstanding about the Great Pyramid. You do not see prophecies inscribed in there, but there's a chronological timeline that's been gone over with a fine-tooth comb by all kinds of researchers and people, and so it's beyond a doubt that there is this timeline. And so when you get up into the uppermost chamber, it's been progressing like a month, an inch for a month, and then it changes at a certain point. Anyway, the midpoint of the king's chamber translates out to the date of 1945 when the first atomic testing was done.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, you know, when you come up against the wall, it's 1953. And so there is a sense that by 1953, the planetary karma had been set by that time. A lot of the Mayan calendric things cite 1983 as a key year in the world history.
When you say set, do you mean that whatever we're going to go on to, we are going to go on to? There is no turning back. The direction at that point is clear. Is that what you mean?
Well, it's like the course has been set.
Yeah, so
and so obviously there is existential value in struggle, as Jean-Paul Sartre said. You do what you have to do regardless.
Well, of course, but the back of your book, Moira, seems to suggest that mankind can still avert with the proper kind of karmic transmission what is to come, and you are now suggesting that may not be the case.
No, I could expound on that a little more. I would just say that there are certain things that are cyclical, and they're in the scheme of things, and the intensity really depends on how well we deal with the crisis. So I think that when I speak about 1953 as like a certain karma being set, I think there's no chance to avert the whole thing at that point, but actions and expectations certainly influence outcomes. So anything we do between that, anything we have done since that point, and what we continue to do between now and, say, the year 2000 or 2012, when this cycle is predicted to end, that will lessen or aggravate, you know, the final outcome.
I see. All right. Hold on a moment, Moira. We'll be right back to you. I don't know. To me, the line I've used again and again is mankind's little red light has come on, the one that says point of no return. In a moment, more of Moira Timms. Now back to Moira Timms. Moira, we have a very bad phone connection for some reason. Your audio is very muffled and a little difficult to understand. I don't know why that is.
Oh, dear, and I'm really talking loud so that I feel like I'm sort of not being...
Yeah, we'll sort of bear with it for now. Hopefully, it'll be okay. At any rate, Moira, to continue, I have said this. I've looked at mankind sociologically because I do the news. You know, I see the news every day. I've got to study the news for what I do. And I have seen a steady, not just a decline, Moira, but an acceleration of decline in social behavior, in our economic world, in our political world. We're about to send 35,000 U.S. troops over to what I consider to be hell. And as a general observer, I've called it the quickening. Events appeared to be accelerating.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, Art, absolutely. You know, what logic follows emotion, and like when you're feeling down or you happen to read the newspaper or the commercial journals, there's any amount of evidence why we're all going to hell, you see, why it's all so terrible. And this is true. This is real stuff. There's no questioning about that. On the other hand, when you're feeling wonderful and you might not read these sources, or you just appreciate the wonderfulness of the day, or you hear other things that are quite uplifting and inspiring on an entirely different level, then you say, well, there is hope, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And so what I'm feeling from all of this is either viewpoint can be justified, It is a fact, however, that because we rely on the news and the newspapers and commercial print media for our information, that news is by definition negative, catastrophic stuff. So you're never going to find how things are improving by reading those sources. You will simply reinforce your fears and your despair.
It's true.
And you don't want to have your head in the ground, but you need to be realistic. So you do have to check and see what's happening in the world. But I think what I'm suggesting is that really it's wonderful and terrible all at the same time. And a lot of it is where we put our attention. I mean, here in the United States, everybody has their problems, but we don't have the problems that they have in Bosnia or many other parts of other third world countries. So everything is sort of relative, and I think personal action is required so that, you know, the good of one becomes the good of all.
Well, personal action on what level?
Excuse me?
Personal action, Moira, on what level? In other words, would
you say...
Well,
any level that draws your interest and your passion, I would think. In the back of my book, for instance, I have a section. I'm calling it the 12-step program to personal and planetary health, and I'm listing areas where people can plug in and make a difference. I think that individuals tend to feel disempowered, you see. They say, well, what can I do? I'm just an individual. These
huge
forces are in motion. The government's, you know, not serving us the way it should. All of this and all this conspiracy stuff.
All right, Moira.
But you feel hopeless.
You do. Moira, hold on a moment. We're at the top of the hour. Relax. We'll be back to you, all right? Moira Timms is my guest from an area near Dreamland. This is Dreamland.
Participate in the program. Call toll-free 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is indeed. Good evening, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Moira Timms, and she has written a book called Beyond Prophecies and Predictions, Everyone's Guide to the Coming Changes, and we'll get back to her in just a moment. Just got off the phone with Golden, Colorado, and there is no confirmation of this second quake that was faxed to me. However, the first quake at 8.0 is confirmed by Golden, Colorado. So again, no confirmation of any other quake. However, I have a sheet here looking back just over the last day or so, 2 days actually, I can probably read about 10 or 15 quakes, the largest of them being 8.0, some of them in the 6 and 5 point range, some that look as though they occurred just prior to the big one, and some of a similar magnitude after the big one. So the action there was prior to and continues following the big one. We all know what information is all about. If you want to be plugged in to the latest on UFOs, all of the phenomena that surrounds them, encounters, sightings, abductions, government cover-up, the whole thing, there is a new publication for you called UFO News World Report. It is a very concisely written newsletter. And as a special holiday offer, you can get it for $19.95 a year. It covers the world for you, formatted and written by seasoned journalists. Find out what's happening. Call 1-800-830-9830. That's 1-800-830-9830. 24 hours a day. Or send a check for $19.95 to Box 2757, Anaheim, California, zip code 92814. It's guaranteed you're going to love this or your money back.
Call 1-800-830-9830. Back now to Moira Timms. Moira?
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Yes. I was just finishing up telling you something about personal action, and I just wanted to make the point about that.
Please.
Because some years ago there was a study done of school children, and many of them felt depressed because they didn't feel that they would really necessarily grow up to be adults or see much adulthood, and this is because of the nuclear shadow.
Yes.
And so much of the success of peace work that has been done that reduces people's fear levels is to get them involved in participating in the solution. You see, when you are active for something that's part of the, you know, problem solving, then that takes the edge off the fear and off the sense of being a sitting duck, you see.
I remember when I was young, Moira, I'm 50 now, so I grew up through the Cold War. My little sister used to cry at night. She was convinced there was going to be a nuclear holocaust and that she would never grow up. So she was one of them.
Yes, and so I think a lot of children feel that way. It's a very insecure place and very confusing for children these days. There's so much stimulation, you see. So this is all part of what it is at this time in history. And so I do think we have to form groups of good, close, loving friends so that we have a buffer for when those feelings come up for us, because they're a natural part of living, but they're just exaggerated right now with the state of the world. So in my book, I do end the whole thing with these 12 steps. So it's a place for people to start so that they can do what they feel they can and know that it's not going to change the world taking one action or one step. But when you have everybody thinking that way, then, you know, you create a whole groundswell that does become a very potent force in the world for change and for good and for transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So you get what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying. But your conclusions seem to be contrary to that sort of little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. In other words, your conclusions, as you've studied the various prophecy, seems to all point in the same direction. I hate to use the word irreversibly, but irreversibly.
Well, there is something coming online. We are moving very fast towards something extraordinary in the historical sense.
I agree.
And all the people who speculate on it kind of get to the point where they can't really verbalize what it is, but you get the sense of the excitement. And
that's right.
Just to kind of, and it's not for any one person to say what, because this is the great mystery, you see. But what I think it has to do with is it's an evolutionary change that we're coming to very rapidly. It's in the natural scheme of things, whether it's totally negative or just like scary positive. It's, you know, we don't know how that's going to turn out at this point. But it's some, the way I kind of hold it in my mind, Art, it's like, you know, you're up above the snow line, for instance, and you're coming down with the ice floes at spring thaw, and you've got your little canoe, and the water is moving very fast. And if you are not impeccable, if you don't just do it just right, you will be capsized, you will be crushed by the big ice floes.
Mm-hmm.
So you navigate your way down there as fast as you can, but you just get your mind on it and you just do it because there is no choice. You know what I mean? And it's that kind of a challenge that we're facing. So it requires a lot of courage. It requires commitment to the growing sense of what is positive. And I don't think there's a blueprint out there. I don't think there's any manual on this stuff. But I think there's a deep part of us, you know, as individuals and collectively, that we go by the feeling of what it is.
Yeah, look, I put it this way. Animals have instincts. We're animals. I think we have instincts.
Right.
I can feel it. I can feel something like the other shoe is about to drop. And I've been feeling it for some time now. So have a lot of other people. It's just a simple, I believe, instinctual feeling. That's what you're describing.
Yes. And that is the guidance. That really is. And so one way to kind of make that more coherent, I think, is to look at myth. We're just getting now that myth is not fable and story and fantasy the way we thought of it, but it's kind of like metaphor. It's an encodement of ancient wisdom that has come down in story form, but it's true for all people in every culture throughout every age. And when you strip away all the fancy parts of all of the world and global myths, it gets to be very, very simple. It really boils down to the fact that there's a beginning of things and an end of things. It's not a linear movement through time. It's cyclical. Patterns of meaning tend to repeat themselves over time. And so when we look at that, we can see from the myths that have been left us clues that could form a blueprint so that we can navigate the future, because myth is predicated on the fact that what has happened in the past in a slightly different way will happen again.
Well, Moira, there are people who believe that our planet has been here for billions of years, and there are people who believe that civilizations, mankind himself, has come and gone many times. Do you believe that?
Oh, of course, yes.
Of course, yes, you say. Why do you say that? What evidence is there to back up the myth that civilizations have come and gone?
Well, are you talking hard evidence or soft evidence?
Well, I'm talking the best you've got.
Well, I'm here to plug my book. But in all fairness, for instance, take Graham Hancock's book, Fingerprints of the Gods.
Yes.
He's a prize-winning journalist. He's written a 600-page book. He took 5 years to travel to the sacred sites of the entire world. He doesn't, you know, wag his finger in your face. He says, look at this, and look at that, and what do you think? And he talks about things that are these megalithic monuments, 500-ton blocks that have been transported hundreds of miles by so-called primitive people at the dawn of history, with a technology that would be required that we don't even have today.
That's true.
So things like that are very compelling. And I'll tell you now what Gordon Michael told me. He said, watch Egypt in 96. He said, the stuff that will be discovered in 96, I think I'm quoting here, he said, will leave people gasping.
Gossiping.
Gasping. Gasp.
Oh, gasping. Your English accent is to me every now and then. Gasping. Gordon Michael Skitt said the things that will be discovered in Egypt in 1996 will leave people gasping.
Yes.
Well, I know there has been a new chamber recently confirmed as discovered, and Gordon Michael's indicating there's going to be a lot more in the year to come.
Yes. There have been myths that have come down to us through the Greek historians, you know, Herodotus and Edgar Cayce, some of the Arabic sources that have been preserved, and they always spoke about a complex of tunnels and chambers beneath the Giza Plateau, beneath the Sphinx and the pyramids, that would be, or that are a repository of knowledge from previous civilizations, and we're thinking probably Atlantis, okay? Knowledge of their technology, their arts, their sciences, things like that.
Moira, I wonder if they... You know, I'm one who believes that this may be discovered also. And if it were to be discovered, do you think the discovery would be made public?
Well, I can tell you that next March, the Department of Antiquities are having an unveiling of the two secret tunnels beneath the Sphinx that have been discovered. It's going to be an international media event. I'm taking groups that will be there in March, and our group is one of the few that will be allowed inside the Sphinx enclosure.
Oh.
So that is promises to be very exciting. There is a sense, I mean, nobody has said this, understand, but there's a sense that there's more to this than meets the eye. That might be the tip of the iceberg or just the end of the tunnel. The Greek geographer, Iamblichus,
yes.
We have his texts in college and we go by every word he said, you know, but when he said that he was taken by the Egyptian priesthood into a chamber beneath the paws of the Sphinx that came up in the, the basement, came up in the pit of the Great Pyramid, and then he saw certain things inscribed on the walls, everybody goes, no, and they don't believe it, you see. So if this is true, we'll find out, because I know you had a guest on your show, John Anthony West. He had some people exploring on the surface, and they discovered a sonar sounding of a square chamber between the pores.
That's correct.
To my knowledge, this has not been excavated,
but
it could be part of what Iamblichus at least was talking about.
Uh-huh.
So I think if there was an event, like Atlantis, where there was a universal deluge, or at least an Atlantic or a Pacific deluge,
yes,
there would have been an exodus of people, you know, the intelligentsia, the, you know, the really the leading people who would want to preserve their technology. They'd want to have a record of their civilization for posterity.
Well, you're giving me a wonderful answer, but it's not answering my question. My question is, if it is discovered there have been previous civilizations, not necessarily one, but many, do you think the information would be made public?
Oh.
That is my question.
I think it would, but part of the prophecy is that there will be cover-ups. Something I quote in my book by the Academy of Future Science.
Moira, I think you're wrong. Why would they, how could they possibly make it public?
Well, let me say this. The force of history will burst its forth. Look at the Dead Sea Scrolls. The people that studied the Dead Sea Scrolls were hand-picked by the Office of the Inquisition of the Vatican. What they found was heresy, that the historical record was contrary to many of the fundamental teachings of the Church. So for 40 years, these people sat on the data. The world was waiting. Scholars came and went and were born and died that should have had access to those texts, and they never did because they sat on the heretical material.
You're making my point. You're making my point.
Yes. So it was eventually revealed, and now the Dead Sea Scrolls are in paperback so that you and I can read them.
Oh, that's true.
You know?
But when I said that, I meant in our lifetimes, in our children's lifetimes.
If you go by the prophecies, Art, Edgar Casey said they would be discovered. Now, it is a fact that people in the Department of Antiquities have been sympathetic to Gordon Michael Scallion's approach to things. And the man who... I have a personal friend who is friends with the director of the Antiquities. And although I know there's a lot of professional jealousy that goes on in high circles where this kind of professionalism is involved, they want themselves to be the ones to release this stuff or to be the discoverers. They don't want lay people with a lot of chutzpah cracking the code for them. They don't want those people to get the credit for what they later do. So I think that there's enough people expecting and feeling deeply that there is something there, that it would be very hard at this time, especially given the revelation of these tunnels, to sit on the rest.
All right, Moira.
It might be an attempt, but I think it would be unsuccessful ultimately.
All right, Moira, hold on. Just a moment. Currency is going to change.
Let's preserve the secrets to keep the system going.
Yes, of course.
These new leaps of consciousness that are taking us into, hear me clearly now, you know, transpersonal realms.
I don't
have any trouble talking about virtual reality and the global brain being the internet. We seem to have a little trouble talking about another or a deeper sense of reality or a transpersonal reality and, you know, personal reality.
Slow down, Moira. What does transpersonal reality mean?
Well, it just means so real that it seems like fiction, you know. Truth can be stranger than fiction.
You mean like today's headlines?
No, I mean like the things we're talking about, like the fulfillment of prophecy, like new inventions, like super intelligence, like suddenly being able to do it right instead of the way we do things.
Mm-hmm.
It means moving into a level of maybe more of the group sense of things, so that we don't just protect our own interests. We realize that we're all more similar than we are different, and we do things for all of us. That a world that works for everyone, that's what I'm talking about.
We have
that capability. We have the resources, but the way the system is set up does not allow for that right now.
Well, yes, but according to all prophecy, time is short. So I believe the year that most point to is 2012, depending on the calendar you use.
However, Art, that is true, but we have the force of history behind us in the sense that many, many influences are coming to bear upon the human condition right now. These are things that we can only really intuit our way into. We look at the prophecies and we take the experience of some of us. I mean, there's extraordinary things happening on the planet that you report on all the time, you know.
Oh, yes.
So this wasn't so 50 years ago. So we're getting into some deep water and some interesting domains of consciousness, you know. So to keep one's center and to keep making sense of it all seems to be one of the major challenges. And so what I suggest is to have the guideline of, you know, the prophetic consensus, to look at the past and see the patterns of meaning that can be and are repeating themselves, is to give us a sense of where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
That way we can sort of navigate with some sense of direction. And so it's always part of the mythology that the first time is the perfect time, you know, the innocent time. There was the paradise, right? The golden age?
The golden age. Hold it right there, Moira. We're at the bottom of the hour. Rest for about 4 minutes. We'll come back and get to some phone calls shortly. If you have a question for Moira Timms, get your phone warmed up. We're going to the phones here in just a moment. This is Dreamland.
Kingdom of Nigh. We continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Once again, here I am. My guest is Moira Timms. She has written a book called Beyond Prophecies and Predictions, Everyone's Guide to the Coming Changes, indicating there will be changes. And I've got some updates for you. Art, this is from Rick in Reno. And by the way, everybody, you can stop sending me USGS reports. I've got about a million of them, confirming there have been, in the last 2 days, a total of 15 quakes in the Kuril Islands, and that's, I said 15, culminating in an 8.0 earthquake, but with earthquake in the chain, but it is a 7.2, not 8.2. So there you have it. A total of 16 earthquakes. 7.2 would be the largest quake since the 8.0 quake. Also, I would like to read to you a fax that I got from Stan Dale, and I know a lot of you follow Stan very closely. Artichoke, his little pet name for me. I am hesitant to announce the following. I feel I must, though, in the light of the unofficial reports of magnetic field anomalies in California 2 days ago. The official report, which I sent you, says no anomalies occurred, yet I continue to get pilots' reports, etc., saying it did occur. For 4 days, I've been watching three tremendous thermal changes grow in size off the coasts of Nicaragua, the Guatemala-Mexican border, and Baja California up to San Francisco. I have not posted these on my webpage, as I'm not sure yet what to say. Florida, the Bahamas, Chile, Argentina, North Australia, Southern Coast Australia, Adelaide, North Island, New Zealand, Romania, Bulgaria, Turkey, Japan, and Kamchatka Peninsula should all be on alert for action as well. Still trying to assess the changes here. Storms may be confusing the mantle's thermal effects along the east coast of the U.S. So, there you are. He said, I'm not sure of this call, but I think we've got a problem brewing. Regards, Stan Dale. In a moment, back to Moira Timms. Be back now to Moira Timms. Are you there?
Yes, Art.
Good. Do you feel up to taking some phone calls?
Oh, you bet. You bet. I just wanted to say that why are you making such a big deal out of the earthquakes? Why are you giving all this minute detail about it? I mean, what do you want to accomplish with that?
I'm not in the position of accomplishing anything. Simply presenting the news.
Well, you see, they're going on all over the place all the time, and if it's not an earthquake, it's something else. And so this is grist for the mill, and
of course
it is. If you stop and watch every car that goes by, you miss the big picture. You know what I'm saying?
So, you were telling me earlier, before the show, I think, how many 8.0 earthquakes we have on average per year?
That's right.
How many is that?
Just one on an average.
Just one?
Yeah.
Okay.
However, what I really want to emphasize is, you see, this is the state of the news as it has become. People go, oh, wow, when they hear this. It just agitates them, but there's nothing they can do about it.
No, that's true.
Proposed.
In fact, if California, Moira, if California falls in the ocean, there's nothing people can do about it.
Well, you see, the big picture is that that is part of the overall scenario, because what we're coming into with the end of the prophecy cycle is like big time. Earth changes all over the place, you see. So
I do.
I just feel that by focusing unduly on every single anomalous thing, it just puts people deep into despair, you know. So it's not that they wouldn't want to know about it, but that is the hard news. It gets in your face and it gets your attention. So I'm presenting soft news here, which is to say chaos will increase, disorder and crime in the streets will increase. It's the nature of the times, and this is the nature of the challenge. We're coming down the birth canal, as it were.
Yes.
At the end of this cycle, at the end of the cycle is always the beginning of another one. So it never was comfortable coming down the birth canal. It was just like total chaos, total fright.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the beginning of something wonderful and new. And so this is sort of what's going on right now. So the point I want to make before you open it to call us, Art, is that at such a time when intellectual considerations and technology is not going to help us out of these situations, what occurs, according to people like Carl Jung, the psychologist, or Teilhard de Chardin, the Christian philosopher, something happens to the group mind. Archetypes of wholeness emerge from the collective unconsciousness, and you don't have to understand what they mean or even know one when you see one for it to affect the way you think and feel. But what these images are that come out of the mind are sort of unconscious. And primarily, I would just point to what happened when we got into space in 1969. There we were, out there, we were looking back at Mother, the planet Earth, our home in the middle of space. And suddenly, you know, you've heard this said before, there were no boundaries, there was no latitude and longitude and geographic boundaries. It was just our planet where we all live. And so that the sphere is the archetypal symbol of the complete whole self. You know, that is a symbol of the center. And the center is the organizing principle, the creative generator of everything that's to do with life and happiness and perfection. So when we have such images, and the world tree is another one, you know, the world tree has its roots in the ground and the branches in the heavens. It links heaven and earth and what you see with what you don't see, that kind of thing. These affect the way we think, and we're creeping into people's dreams right now. They're showing up in art. There are people all over the planet that are not reported in the news doing ceremony to bring these symbols forth and just egg them into the collective consciousness so they can act as mobilizing forces for the way we think and the way we do things. So I just wanted to say this is what's happening right now as things get more and more intense and as the quickening gets quicker. So there's no place to stand, and that's the nature of chaos. And people really don't have a sense of where they're going. You know, you look at all the urban sprawl, you look at the cancer center, cellar, the cancer cell, it's all the same thing. You see, it's growth without restriction. There's no pattern of meaning. And so,
Moira?
This is our problem, but there's a way through it.
All right.
I'm just saying there's a way through.
All right. Moira, I think you're selling some people short. I think you're underestimating their ability to assimilate information without a panicking or quickening the quickening, but simply observing it. I am able to observe it, for example, without tearing my hair out. I simply watch the news, whether it's social, economic, political. I watch all of these arenas every single day. It's my job. And I nevertheless manage to stay centered. So in a way, it kind of sells people short a little bit to suggest because they hear factual news about an 8-point earthquake, they're going to go off the deep end. I don't think so.
Well, I really am not implying that so much as just saying that this is what takes up space as the news. The real good news is probably less tangible, and so it doesn't get reported. And so
that's true.
So that's really more my focus.
I see.
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't mean to smack your fingers.
Oh, you didn't.
No, you didn't. I simply wanted you to understand that many people out there are able to assimilate this information as it comes in and note what it means without adding to it because of a state of panic. Do you follow me?
Yes.
Okay, good. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi. Hello?
Hello.
Are you there? Guess not. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi. Well, what am I doing wrong here? Is there anybody there? No, I guess, Moira, I may be doing something wrong here. Let me try one more here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Oh, greetings. Good. I've got it. Yes, sir.
Greetings from a fellow ham radio operator.
Indeed.
Yes, my comment.
Yes, sir.
No offense to your guest, but I've never heard so much doublespeak in my whole life. I'm a Christian, and I can tell you that the Bible is true because it is a supernatural book to the believer.
Well, I didn't hear her say it wasn't true.
No, but
all right, let's hold it. Hold it a minute.
Sure.
Slow down. Take a breath. What is it specifically that she said that you take issue with?
Well, I think what she's saying is it's a mixture of what Jesus has said in the Bible, in the New Testament, but it's wrapped, you know, it's kind of like the movie said, it's wrapped in an enigma. I mean, it's what she's saying is nothing that anyone can get their hands on. Jesus foretold in the Bible that we would have earthquakes, we would have beginning of birth pangs, but that there would be hope at the end of all that.
I think she said that.
Well,
at least that
no offense, I didn't pick up on it, and I'm sure she's a wonderful person. I just can't, you know, that to me it's a lot of doublespeak, and as a Christian, I don't really think that's something someone can get a handle on. You can read what she's talking about in the New Testament.
May I just address the caller?
Yes.
I felt a little bit of pressure because of the commercials, and we've had trouble with my phone, so I'm having to speak extra loud, you know. And sometimes things get said that need to be gone into in more depth, so the full picture doesn't really come out. But in my book, I do devote an entire chapter to the Bible. I talk about the prophets, I quote the prophets, I quote Jesus, and I put it in a very positive light. So I think if you would browse through a copy in a bookstore, you would see that I do set the record straight for Jesus, okay?
Well, do you feel that Jesus was a prophet, or was he the Son of God, incarnate?
Fair question.
Definitely the Son of God, no question.
Then if he was the Son of God, God is perfect, and God cannot be an error. So therefore, whatever God says is true and perfect.
Well, did I say it wasn't?
No, but I'm wondering why you're trying to maybe mix it up. You know, it's like a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Oh, you compare it. Well, just because some people want to hear all science, that's what's real to them. Some people are only Christian, and they only want to hear Christian information. So what I've done is put the whole enchilada together so that we can emphasize our similarities, because what is said in the Bible is said by other world traditions, and I think Christians would benefit to know that, although it isn't, that there's no difference, there's no separation, it's only in the perception.
Now that comment I don't understand. May I ask a question? I do not understand what you just said.
My perception is that Christians only want Jesus to say what is so. If somebody else says the same thing as Jesus, they take argument with it. And I am saying there's one truth, and Jesus spoke it, but other people spoke it too in its essential elements. And so I don't believe that we have to be exclusive.
So that you're saying that other people can be prophets?
Yes.
Okay, then would you agree that the test of a true prophet is 100% accuracy?
No.
Then you would contradict what the Bible says. Because the Jewish nation was instructed to stone to death anyone that made a prophecy that did not come to true.
Well, I take issue with a wrathful God who does some of the things the Bible reports. And what I'm saying is that...
Well, then to be honest, Moira, you then take issue with many Christians, don't you?
I do, yes.
Okay, caller...
Not with Jesus, with Christian interpretation, and we could never stop this conversation. It would go on forever.
Yes, it would, that's true. All right, Moira and the caller, thank you very much, caller. Moira, hold on, we'll be right back to you. That was clarifying.
If you feel the desire to control your own work hours, your work environment, be your own boss, choose your own work companions, then maybe you...
Moments before the top of the hour to Moira Timms. Moira, I think that you and I look at the same things and see them perhaps somewhat differently. That's what we've got going on here. I look at the earthquakes, I look at the news, because I must every single day, and I go by my feelings, you know, my instinctual, we talked about that a little while ago, almost animal-like feelings. And I can't even tell you what it is. I wouldn't even try to put it into words except to say it's the feeling that something is coming.
Yes.
I don't overly worry about it, but I feel it. I note it, and that's about as far as I go with it. Otherwise,
well, you know what, I work in part-time in a metaphysical bookshop, and so I do get a lot of frightened people in that want solace, want answers, and
sure.
I see how sometimes a news item can be like a match to paper with certain people, and so I'm really aware of that. But I watch the science, too, and I try and ground my information. I just was choosing to speak about the other end of the spectrum right now. Could I just say something like a P.S. to what the last caller brought up?
Absolutely.
I would like to say that the way I view prophecy is it's a gift. It's giving us a sneak preview of something that's in the works. And so the purpose of prophecy is to warn us so that if we take notice of it, we have free will and we can take certain constructive action to avert the outcome if it's a negative prophecy. So in that sense, Art, if a negative prophecy is fulfilled, you could say that's the one that failed because we didn't take enough action in the right way to avert whatever the negative outcome was. So I feel a lot of that is what we're dealing with here. It's just we do the best we can, given the information that we have from the people in the past who could clearly see the nature of these cycles that repeated. And we all know, because at this point we're feeling it as well, something is coming online that's incredibly exciting and challenging. It's scary at the same time. And so keeping our balance is really what we need to do to see this thing through. And that means taking note of the scientific and the facts in the real world, the earth changes, but also not avoiding spiritual realities or psychological insights that kind of take us into another way of dealing with the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Okay. Moira, do you remember... I've said this to a lot of my guests lately, and really we're so close to the top of the hour that I'll hold it and we'll do it after the top of the hour. I don't want to get into it because there will not be time for you to respond. But we'll come back after the top of the hour and we'll explore our differences. Stay right there. Moira Timms is my guest. Her book is Beyond Prophecies and Predictions. And it explores prophecy, prediction, the Bible, kind of meshes it all together. And you'll get more of her take on that and a bit of what I've got to say after the news coming up next. You're listening to the CBC Radio Network from an area near Dreamland in the high desert. This is Dreamland.
The G. Gordon Liddy Show, only on Talk 102.
The bust is especially embarrassing for Mrs. Gore, a mental health expert who promoted family values, including a crusade to rape obscene rock lyrics, and she's written a book about raising R-rated children in an X-rated society. Well, here is the tip-off as to what happened, ladies and gentlemen.
My view now of where this change is headed, or what this change is about, or where I feel we are in this change, and I can put it very simply, and I can live with it very easily and have for quite some time now. There was once a movie, it is my favorite analogy, called The High and Mighty. It was a good movie. Moira may be old enough to remember The High and Mighty, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. It involved a reciprocal engine aircraft, motors, not jets, back in the days when we flew the Pacific Ocean from here to Japan or here to wherever. And about halfway across the Atlantic Ocean, the reciprocal engine aircraft of that day could only carry enough aviation gas, so that they could go from point A to point B across the whole Pacific. Well, somewhere out across the mid-Pacific at some point, about the halfway point, a little red light would come on in the cockpit, and under it would be a label that says point of no return. Now, that simply means that you now have only enough gasoline to go on to your destination. Should anything go wrong, you do not have enough gasoline to turn around and go back to the point you took off from. Now, that analogy in mind, it is my view, looking at the world, listening to the news, and observing the Earth changes that continue and quicken, that mankind's little red light came on some time ago. Now, I can't tell you what's at the destination. I have no idea where we're going, in other words. I simply have felt for some time that that little red light has been on. So we're on the way. Does that analogy make sense to you, Myra?
Oh, yes, it does.
That's the way I feel, and I'm...
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good analogy.
And I'm comfortable with that, centered with that, as you would say. I've got a fact for you here, and it says simply, if God is so perfect, then why is his creation so imperfect? You want to take a shot at that?
Yes, we had a thing called the fall, and that was where we ate of the tree of knowledge, and we disqualified ourselves from paradise.
And we got thrown out, actually.
We fell out of the tree.
Well, I think we got thrown out.
Up to it.
we got thrown out.
Yes.
Nice.
Banished. So what this means is we have free will, and the point of the whole exercise is to get back to the place we left and qualify for godhood. And so the fact of the world doing the things it does and the people behaving the way they do has absolutely nothing to do with God. He says, if you want to do it this way, do it and learn by your own mistakes.
It's called free will.
Free will.
Mm-hmm.
So we learn. There's nothing like a bit of suffering to make us modify our behavior, you see. It's a great learning process. We can learn through other ways, but, you know, the pattern of human nature has been to just wait until, you know, you're up against the wall and then do something. So it is a place of suffering, the world. It hasn't been happy. And part of what this sorting out period is about, I believe, and, you know, what the prophecies seem to be saying, is that this is a time when, you know, school is over. We're coming to the graduating point.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will graduate and some people won't. And we look at the native traditions, people who have lived this way for hundreds of years and haven't been civilized in the same way that Western culture has. They have a phenomenon which they call an initiation. Many of the wise people in native culture who are shamans, people of certain abilities, great healers, great visionaries,
yes,
they come to qualify for this by tremendous suffering. And it's like... there's always this story that is the same. It's like a brush with death, maybe an after-death experience where you actually were dead and returned. You know, there are these people that have been revived. Something that's so bad, it tears you apart. And all the mythology has this model of being torn apart, falling apart, being dismembered, and then something miraculous happens and all the parts come back together again and reconstellate at a higher level. And so at this higher level, you've got an evolutionary anomaly. A person who is gifted psychically is a healer and moves in a way to benefit all of humanity with whom he or she comes in contact. So I feel, in a sense, this is what the world is coming to. I was talking earlier of, you know, the original paradise, that was the perfect time. And so in all the mythology and all these stories, we hear about the beginning when it was perfect and the ending when it wasn't. So as time wears on, things become more and more chaotic. We get further away from our state of wholeness until we fall apart so badly and the chaos is so distracting to us that the only thing we can do is to wait for some internal process to happen in the deep psyche. And this is where these archetypes of wholeness begin to emerge. It's part of an evolutionary process, so that some people will not make it, some people will. The good news is that it's the beginning of a new birth.
Mm-hmm.
A new phase of human evolution. But it isn't arrived at without this sorting out period, without this purification. And that's the nature of the suffering. So in the big plan, God has provided a way for us to get it right, ultimately.
All right. Let's go back to the phone and see what they say. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi. Hello there. Now, somehow they're not hearing me. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi.
Hello, Art, and greetings to your guest. Listen, I'm going to ask you just a generic question. If you were to be an alien force coming here, would you look at man as a mistake? I know I've asked it before, but I kind of want you to expound on it with your current guest.
All right, sure.
Good night, Art.
Good night. You want to answer that, Moira?
Well, would I be a gray, or would I be one of the others?
Oh, I don't care. You be any color you want.
I might look at humanity as a parasite.
A parasite?
Yeah, a plague upon the earth.
A plague on the earth?
Or I might see them. I would see that we're gearing up for something that is important to us, and we're about to have a collective experience that will. That will improve our situation.
Gee, you scared me for a moment. I thought I heard your positive karma slipping.
What did I say?
you said that the gray or the any colored alien might look at us as a plague, I think you said, or.
Well, I'm not the only one to have said that, because we have destroyed the biosphere pretty much, you know, and we've depleted the resources, and we kill each other. You know, there's a better way to do a planet.
You talk of pole reversals. I'm beginning to feel as though we have role reversals here. First time caller line, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hello.
Yes, I have a comment to make to the gentleman who called in trying to say that all the prophecies that have... you know, that Jesus talked about, that he was saying that that this woman, what she's saying, it doesn't fit. Well,
he was taking the typical Christian view, sir, that there is no prophet walking the earth unless there is a 100% a correct prophet, which, of course, would have been Jesus, and therefore there can be no prophets on earth now other than false prophets.
Yeah. Well, I have to differ with him because, first of all the prophecies concerning the end of the world, they pertain to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D., thus being fulfilled almost, 2,000 years ago. I'd have to agree more with your host that we're going into a new time period, or as you would say yourself, into this quickening where we're evolving into a higher being. But not to insult that man, but I just think it'd probably be a little bit better if most fundamental Christians would just do a little more research and studying, and they'd probably find some of this stuff to be true.
Okay, thank you very much.
I could add a little something to that. Thank you, caller.
Sure.
I would just add, it is very clear that what was being prophesied, because they said it would happen within the lifetime of the disciples, was the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D. But because this is an archetypal prophecy, it is good for all times, for all people, and it repeats itself in different ways. So it wouldn't invalidate it in any way, the fact that something that was a fulfillment of that prophecy happened in 70 A.D. The same prophecy is still valid now, just on a larger scale, you see?
Okay. Moira, what is your view, your personal take on Gordon Michael Scallion?
I think Gordon is extremely sincere. I believe he really does his homework. He's very honest about his track record and how he arrived at his visions.
Mm-hmm.
He has batteries of people working for him to ground the information with the scientific record. You know,
mm-hmm.
like he had a vision about crust slippage somewhere or tectonic upheaval.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
What is the geological record saying? So I feel he's about as responsible as you can get.
As responsible as you can get.
Yes.
When he says something like, watch Etna, and watch Vesuvius, and if you see either one of them heating up, that will be the beginning of the severe cycle of the major earth changes that are coming. Have you heard him say that?
I haven't heard him say that.
Oh, well, he said that.
I don't know everything he said, but I know Edgar Cayce also did say that, And I can tell you what that is based on.
Oh, I was just wondering if you would ask Gordon Michael or Edgar Casey, were he alive, why they would give out this information.
Well, because the point on the planet that is exactly opposite turns out to be the Fiji Basin in the Southwest Pacific,
Oh, yeah,
and,
I do.
Remembering some of the conversation with Richard Hoagland,
yeah.
He was talking about, I mean, I'm paraphrasing a layperson's language here.
That's
something,
fine.
The way I understood it was like at 19.5 degrees above or below the equator,
yes.
Is where interdimensional stuff comes into the system of a revolving sphere,
mm-hmm.
Or goes up. So what the place that is opposite Etna, being the Fiji Basin, is 19.5 degrees. That is the largest subduction zone in the Pacific.
Indeed.
One plate folds under another. So 19.5 above the equator is the Hawaiian Islands, where the biggest outpouring of volcanic stuff comes out.
Yes.
So apparently there are internal dynamics with the rotation of the planet. So Etna is simply the point opposite the major subduction zone.
No question about it. My question went more to, would you inquire of them why they would dispense this information? To what end?
Well, that is an echo of what I asked you earlier.
I meant to echo it.
Because out of all the events that are occurring, there's some that are just general and random, but there's some that are pivotal and key.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of Etna and the Caspian Sea and the Southwest Pacific are key events. And I do have some extra information along those lines. Just before we went on the air, I was telling you that Jeffrey Goodman had written a book called We Are the Earthquake Generation. And he had given a sequence of key pivotal events based on a consensus of psychics. And I found these notes now. So he was saying if there should be, I guess he's talking earthquakes, beginning in India, there would be a sequence that would be key. So that would be something to look out for.
Okay.
An earthquake beginning in India, going to Japan,
mm-hmm.
I guess next being showing up in Italy, in the Vesuvius area, then Mount Pelee, which is near Martinique, and then the West Coast.
Well, I'm sure you're aware of the new activity in all of the areas that we just talked about. Moira, hold on. We'll be right back. All right, we're working very hard on getting Moira Timms back on the line. Thank you very much, telephone company, for A, the lousy connection, and then B, breaking it when we least expect it. But that, too, I'm centered with and used to. It happens all the time. With a little luck, Moira Timms back on Dreamland in just a moment. Stay right there. Is Moira Timms, her book Beyond Prophecies and Predictions, Everyone's Guide to the Coming Changes. And we've got her back on the line once again. Moira, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry about that. Phone company has been very bad lately. I've got a fax here, Moira. Art, will you please ask Moira what her take on Hale-Bopp is, its significance and relationship within the prophecy that she has been researching? Do you know of Hale-Bopp?
I do, yes. I think it's extremely interesting that it's showing up right now and that, there's something about it that we haven't quite got a handle on. The means of pole shift has never been clearly understood, but when we look back at the historical record, it does seem like the major geological changes that came about, like the extinction of the dinosaurs and the changes of the great geological ages, like the Cretaceous Tertiary boundary and things like that, were because of comet collisions. So, many people, in looking at this phenomenon of pole shift, have wondered what could be the instrument that would cause it. And cometary bombardment is something that has been common to all the planets in the solar system, including ours. So all the votes aren't in yet as far as what this comet is, when it's, if it's going to come significantly close to the Earth or not.
But it's
definitely showing up at a time when we're thinking comets.
1.5 AU, according to the astronomers. Of course, that's all we know right now. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi.
Hi, I'm really pleased to get through, and
where are you?
I'm in Columbia, Missouri. My name's Julia.
Hi, Julia.
To speak to my host of my favorite radio show and the author of my favorite prophecy book. And I really enjoyed this book because it's so coherent. When I read your book, you put things in a really good framework, and I even have, like, some notes from your book here, a timeline that I made, because I've read many prophecy books in the last few years, and you really do go beyond just the sort of hit-and-miss approach many of them have, and it is, you did make things very coherent, and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Julia. I appreciate you letting me know.
Oh, good. And I was wondering, I had written down for the year 1995, you had written that we're in the beginning of a 6-year process transforming our relationship to the sun and magnetism. And I was just curious, you know, Art's gotten a lot of calls lately from people about changes in the magnetic field, the feeling that it has changed. And I know that in Columbia, Missouri, as silly as it sounds, several people have noticed lately that we're at a different place on the compass than we used to be. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, what you meant about transforming our relationship to the sun and the relationship to magnetism, if you could elaborate on
that. All right, Julia, thank you. Moira?
I'll try and be succinct, Julia. It is a fact that the magnetic fields of the magnetic poles of the Earth have been shifting incredibly fast since the mid-50s. They've been updating the Navy isogonic maps every 5 years. Magnetic poles used to shift about 2% a year, and since 55, it's been 400% a year. So they've had a satellite up to look at this to understand the mechanism at work. But the magnetic field of the planet is generated by the spin. And so as the planet slows down, the gravitation seems to weaken also. And that diminishes the shielding around the planet so that cosmic energies like the ultraviolet from the holes in the ozone layer are more likely to penetrate the Earth. It's an interesting phenomenon. It's part of the pole shift cycle, I believe. Scientists are not clear whether the magnetic poles shift at the same time as the geographic poles. I think periodically it could be both together. But the last time, interestingly enough, the last time the magnetic poles shifted was at the time of the flood. That would have been about 10,400 BC. And so the magnetism controls the planetary grid. I could say something a little bit more about the planetary grid.
Let me ask this, Moira. Do you believe that the pole change, when it occurs, is a slow, gradual process from a mortal point of view, or is it an instantaneous process?
Well, historically, it's been an instantaneous process. And so what I'm thinking, and this is pure speculation, of course, if everybody acted appropriately for one day, you know, whatever that means, that would create incredible change on the planet, right? I believe what we do collectively influences this kind of thing. I think there's a misunderstood connection between, you know, human consciousness and geophysical realities. So I would suggest that if we could all do it right or improve the way we do things, then it could be a gradual process, because it is a process that needs to recur periodically. On the other hand, if we continue to screw up the way we have, it could be entirely catastrophic. And so we don't really know. But anyway, when I was talking about a change in our relationship to the sun, this was related to the fact that the sunspotting cycle has also been irregular. And since, I think, 75, there have been more sunspots than usual. So these solar storms that periodically recur have been out of phase and more intense. And it's a scientific fact that sunspotting does affect human consciousness in various measurable ways. So this all has to do with this evolutionary shift that we're embarked upon.
All right. We don't have a lot of time, so let's see how many calls we can get in. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi.
How you doing? I wanted to backtrack a little bit, if I may.
You may. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. My name is Stephen.
All right, Stephen.
I believe it was in the last hour you were talking about the tombs underneath the Sphinx.
Yes.
I've been very interested in that, and there was a couple of things I was wondering, and I wanted to touch on. First of all, I wanted to know if there was any way, you know, you could tell me how I could follow that. Where would I go to get information on that?
The answer is simple. Listen to my program. It's all here all the time. And to repeat what Moira said, she talked with Gordon Michael Scallion about 2 days ago, and Moira, you check me if I'm wrong, but he told you that the message was that what will be revealed in Egypt over the next year will cause people to gasp.
Yes. I didn't mean to say that there were tombs underneath the Sphinx, but just canals. And but there has been a workman's village excavated in the area where there are tombs. I am taking a group of people to Egypt in March, the spring equinox next year.
Oh, yes.
We're going to do some grid engineering. We're going to reenact an ancient Egyptian ceremony to bring positive energy into the planet and the grid system at the sacred sites. So this has implications for planetary healing and personal inner work, too. So we'll be exploring some of these sites.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi.
Hi, yes. Your guest had mentioned Graham Hancock's book, Fingerprints of the Gods.
Yes.
And in that, he had mentioned, or actually he gave a date, I believe it was 2012?
Yes.
December, sometime in December. Well, you had had an interview with Richard Hoagland, and he had said that he had gotten together with Graham Hancock and come to the conclusion that the date was inaccurate.
By about 6 years, I think.
Yeah, spring of 97, I believe.
Right.
Which is right around the time when Hale Bopp is supposed to come around.
Right again, April 1st.
Yeah. Now, your guest had mentioned your guest had mentioned that where was I going with this? I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Could I just suggest that the idea of 2012 was a consistent idea to all the civilizations of the ancient world. They did not have a Gregorian calendar. And so Mayan shaman that are very active right now give the year 2012 as the date. It was a consistent date for many of the ancient cultures. They all agreed on that. So I don't think it's for a Western student to invalidate that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something going on. It will be a culmination of the whole thing, and the way the prophecy goes is everything will be complete around the year 2000, and the way the Maya tell it is the additional years until 2012, they call that the beak of time. It's a sorting out period.
Well, could this comet in fact be the like what the Sumerians had mentioned a long time ago, Nibiru?
Well, I think that if you'll recall, we've had a recent guest that have called it the Harbinger. I had Zachariah Sitchin on, and he called it the Harbinger.
Like a precursor?
Yes,
I guess?
Yes, uh-huh. You may have missed that show. Would you care to comment on that, Maura? I had Zachariah Sitchin on.
Yes, this is possible. I think it's still the outcome is still uncertain. There have been a lot of conferences in various parts of the world on cometary collisions. It's definitely something that people have been giving attention to, and they've even been trying to get a government program together to deflect any vectors that would come too close within the Earth's orbit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it remains to be seen what the scientists have to tell us about it. But mythically, it's arriving at the right time to have some impact upon the Earth.
All right.
Whether that's psychological or physical, I couldn't say.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi.
Yes, this is Mark from Collinsville.
Illinois. All right.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Noria, earlier you mentioned the shaking of the heavens, and I believe you said that the Greek translation of heaven was the planet Uranus.
No, I said that the word is Uranus.
Uranus.
And so that is, you know, the root for words that have to do with that.
That sounds close.
Uranus.
Have you ever considered the Sumerian translation of heaven as being the firmament, the hammer bracelet, or what we call today the asteroid belt, which lies between the orbits of Jupiter and Mars?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
You need to read some of Sechin's books. And with this Hale Bopp, it's supposed to be coming between Jupiter and Mars, and so did Nibiru.
Well, it is now presently out beyond the orbit of Jupiter.
Yes, but it's supposed to come between Jupiter and Mars.
Quite correct.
On retrograde.
Yes.
Call toll-free 1-800-618-8255.
Good night.
Good night, sir. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timps. Hello there. Oh, no, I've got the wrong line. First time caller line, you're on the air with Moira Timps. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Turn your radio off, sir.
Okay.
There you go. Okay, you're on the air.
Yes, I had a question for Mara.
All right, where are you?
In Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Okay. Go ahead and ask.
Yes, I had a question. I was wondering, does she believe in the six-day theory concerning a day with God is like 1,000 years? And if she does, how can she correlate that with human mankind continuing to live on and die out?
All right. Do you believe that creation was as is described in the Bible, Moira?
Well, I think it's metaphorical. I mean, divine
Genesis.
Celestial time is different than Gregorian time. That's a linear, you know, chronology that we have. I think there were six stages of evolution. You know, we got to, first off there was energy, then there was gas, right, and then there was plants and animals and humans. And I think we're at the point where we're going to progress from Homo sapiens to probably something that would be more like Homo Christos, a blend of human and divine, superhuman people.
Another jump in evolution.
Yes, definitely a jump in evolution.
All right, hold it right there for a moment. We'll be right back to you. Leprina is liquid aspirin. It will relieve pain of any sort that you've got. Now, obviously, if you've got a headache, you're not going to spray it all over your head. But for some guys send me a fax like that. But for any other part of the body, sore knee, sore shoulder, rheumatism, arthritis, those kinds of things that you would normally take aspirin for, because aspirin is a wondrous pain reliever. You don't have to swallow it. It doesn't have to go through your digestive system. You can spray it on. Somebody should have thought of this 100 years ago. Leprina is available now. It's aspirin. It's in a liquid spray-on bottle. And the way you get it is call 1-800-308-4565. It's a very reasonable cost. It's a bargain for this revolutionary new product. Now, they can tell you at Health Naturally, the company, how you can get it at even a greater savings. Call them 1-800-308-4565. We all know that information is what it's all about, and if you want to be plugged into the latest, hottest, hard data on UFOs, I've got something for you. Please get a pen and paper. It's called UFO News World Report, and it's just brimming with the kind of information you've been looking for. UFO News searches the world to objectively cover the alien spectrum, from sightings and encounters to alleged abductions, government cover-ups, packs it all into one concise newsletter. At a special holiday offer of just $19.95 a year, UFO News can cover the world for you. Formatted and written by seasoned journalists, you'll have monthly access to all this hard-hitting information and more. Now you can be current in this tantalizing and elusive field of UFO phenomena. Find out what's happening. Call 1-800-830-9830. That's 1-800-830-9830, 24 hours a day. Or send a check for $19.95 to Box 2757, Anaheim, California, 92814. It's guaranteed. You'll love it or your money back. Call 1-800-830-9830. All right. And to remind you to get a copy of this program or any other Dreamland program, or to renew your subscription for our newsletter, which goes up in price December 10th, so it's good that you would do it now before that date comes, and it's getting close. The number is 1-800-917-4278. 1-800-917-4278. By the way, the January issue of our newsletter is going to be all about, exclusively about, what I call the quickening. That number again is 1-800-917-4278. Moira Timms back again. Moira, are you there?
Hello, Art. Yes.
Good. The phone company is nice to us one more time. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Moira.
Hi,
my question is, first, I need to know, you said you believe there's a God or a good force. Do you also believe there's an evil?
Yeah, I do.
Leads up to my question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You do?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Okay. Then I'm a Christian, so I kind of, I don't want to, I'm setting you up here. if there's a good and an evil, and I believe the Bible is true, would not the evil, if I was evil, say, I would set up many, many religions. I wouldn't have just Satanism. I would have many religions so close to what the actual truth is to distract and lead people astray and muddy up the waters, so to speak. And I feel that the prophecies in the Bible lead up and tell us about a one-world religion that will all believe the same thing in this higher consciousness. And I think that the truth is mixed in so much in your message and many other messages as to distract from the Bible.
All right. Thank you. My that's a very interesting point of view. I guess I would say, why would an all-powerful God allow such so many people to go down false, misleading trails? That's not my kind of God. Moira?
A wise, loving, omnipotent God, in my view, would create unity within all people. He would not create division where one small minority would control the truth. And when you understand Jungian psychology, there's a way to realize that whatever is the evil is the shadow part of ourselves. It's the evil part that we're not willing to acknowledge in ourselves, but we project it out onto other people. But because we're all more similar than we are different, if you will examine your own shadow and really do your inner work and your own inner spiritual work, whether it's aligning with Jesus or, you know, the true religion of your choice, then you will realize that only that which we don't understand is perceived as of the devil and of evil. So unity is what God wants. He doesn't want division where there's only the saved and the sinners and the condemned. And so I feel any religion that promotes separation is not the true religion. And I feel that certain misguided attitudes are the real devil in the world. And the people who think that they are, some of the people who think that they are the only ones, are part of the problem.
I think there is.
I'm sorry to say that, but that's how I feel.
Well, I think there is no single path. There are many paths, probably headed in both directions. And a Supreme Court justice once said of pornography that he could not quite define it, but knew it when he sees it. And most of us know good and know evil when we see it or feel it or do it or think about it, right?
Yes.
So that would mean there would be many paths. One more quick question. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Moira Timms. Hello.
Hello, this is Fritz from Phoenix.
Hi,
just
Fritz.
Just a quick comment.
Yes.
Art, as a student of life, and you know I've been calling and listening to this show for years,
oh, yes.
It's my opinion that mankind, as we know it, has reached the point of no return in the early 70s.
All right.
Now, I've only 50% of all the predictions come true that were given to us by all the prophets the last 500 years. The human animal, that what we are, will in the end learn to live together and respect creation and nature.
All right, thank you. That's going to have to do it. Moira, where can people get your book?
Well, they can get it nationwide in all bookstores. If they're out of it, it can be special ordered. Or they can call me on my voicemail, and I'll be happy to take their name and address.
Okay, what is your number?
I would just like to say, if anybody is interested in traveling on a very special historic trip with me as a group to Egypt to do some important and exciting and powerful work at the Equinox, please let me know on the voicemail also, and I'll send you details.
All right,
so
and that
the number?
It's
area code 541.
541.
343. 5392.
Let me give that again. You tell me if I'm wrong. It's area code 541-343-5392. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, and you're on the way to Egypt and would not mind taking people of a like mind with you.
Kindred spirits, light workers, people who want to do planetary healing and have a wonderful time.
All right, Moira, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you very much, and blessings on your work and light on your path.
Have a good night, Moira. And the same to all of you out there. The hours are closing on the book, the autographed book deal. It's 1-800-864-7991 from the high desert. I'm Art Bell. Good night.
This has been Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped. Yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. Please join us again next week at this time for Dreamland.